How do we explain the current turn in the coronavirus pandemic situation? So let's put it this way. If you watch live cricket on Indian TV channels, you can't miss that prolific advertisement for a perfume or a deodorant, or maybe for a deodorant being sold as a perfume as usual, where a young man has his shirt blown away in a storm, exposing his well-muscled torso, and a young woman with full female gaze says, "Your clothes are gone, but the fragrance remains." Now, something of the sort, this sort has happened with the pandemic situation as well. The second wave has blown away. The virus is now gone away. Suddenly, Delhi's positivity, for example, positivity rate, which is not a good thing, from about 37% is almost down to 0.37%. That much difference, 100, right? So this has really gone down. But what it is left behind is a stink, not a fragrance. It's left behind some smell, but not a fragrance, a stink. Where does this monster virus come from? Everybody wants to know now, an animal or a lab or the lab. When we say the lab, we mean Wuhan Institute of Virology. Did it reach us humans naturally or because of a very dangerous scientific research gone wrong? Is it biological warfare? The virus is gone for now. It will come back at some point. But the air is heavy with international suspicion. All over the world, people are wondering what has gone wrong. What are the Chinese hiding? Until January, while Donald Trump was in office, anybody talking of a possibility other than a zoonotic transmission. Zoonotic is animal to human or animal to human, like that. Anybody talking about another possibility was dismissed as a conspiracy theorist, right-wing nutcase. Change came rapidly once Trump was gone. Gone with him was also his influence, so toxic and polarizing, it had also infected the scientific world, which should be the last bastion of rationality and facts-based argument, which is biosciences. Even that had got Trumpified and divided accordingly. His departure brought sanity and healthy skepticism back to biosciences, and people began to raise the right questions. And scientists also then freely began debating, slowly but increasingly, where did the virus come from? Because the fact is, if the virus had come from an animal, how come it's been 18 months and nobody's been able to either trace the primary reservoir, which is a bat or a Rufu horseshoe Chinese bat, tiny cute ones, but nobody has found this precise virus in any sample of that bat or an intermediate through which it might have jumped, although various animals from snakes to pangolins have been blamed in the course of time, but we haven't seen any of that. Why had China's Wuhan Institute of Virology sealed all its data in 2019? These questions are now coming up. Why didn't the Americans or indeed the world know that the Chinese were carrying out gain-of-function research, which involves genetically altering already deadly viruses in partnership with US scientific bodies? I mean, these are now well-known facts. Why did the Chinese reject all the names of the scientists the US proposed to join the WHO's fact-finding mission into China, but suggested only one? That is Peter Daszak. Now, Peter Daszak heads EcoHealth Alliance, through which US government federal organizations, that is the National Institute of Health, had routed its grant to Wuhan Institute of Virology. So EcoHealth Alliance was a kind of a cutout that they had used. Also, how come suddenly we saw a flurry of activity or flurry of disclosures from Shi Zhengli, the batwoman of the chief coronavirus researcher at the Wuhan lab? A flurry means every few weeks you found some selective admission of something that takes you probably closer to the lab leak theory, but it could also be a guilty conscience, or at least that's a question raised, that now that she knows some stuff will be found out, it's best to let this information go out in driblets so it doesn't look like it was a big cover-up. Now, the governments and scientific establishments, the important thing is they were still wary of taking on the Chinese. Nobody wants to panga with the big boys. The Chinese are the biggest. Biggest in the sense that the Americans may not be as vindictive with you as the Chinese can be. Also, everybody has some fish to fry in China. And finally, in the scientific world also, there was a fear. The fear was that if we go too much into it, then this may bring back the ban on gain of function research. Now, many scientists thought, or many virologists thought, this was a constituency pressure, that if you ban gain of function research, it's like banning all of virology. So why should we invite the devil on our dining table? Let it remain away. Ye baat khatam ho jayegi. But the such baat ye hai ki baat khatam nahi ho rahi hai, because the stink is now wafting in the air, and if anything, the stink is getting thicker. So what happened? Because the governments and scientific establishments were still wary of getting into it, a multinational army, a large, diverse multinational army of scientists, mathematicians, data analysts, critical analysts, even sci-fi authors and journalists came together to collaborate with one objective, that is discover where the virus came from, or the source of the stink. Is gutter mein hai kya, aur ya manhole ke niche kya hai? Most of them are now part of a loosely structured organization called Drastic. Drastic, it's a drastic problem, it's a drastic solution. Drastic, which is short for Decentralized Radical Autonomous Search Team Investigating COVID-19. It was launched by Gilles Demenioff, a curiouser than cat data scientist at Bank of New Zealand in Auckland, in New Zealand. He was soon joined by sci-fi author and noted scholar Jamie Metzl, and then the gang grew as sharp, curious, and brilliant men and women across the world got together. Internet was the force binding them. This group also includes some remarkable Indians, I must say that. The most significant being an anonymous science teacher who tweets at the Seeker268. We don't know who he is, but we know two others. We know a couple, a scientist couple at Department of Biotechnologies, Central Government's Department of Biotechnologies, Agarkar Lab in Pune, Drs. Monali Rahalkar and Dr. Rahul Bahulikar. They are the ones who ferreted out one key fact which led to this reversal in thinking, that a virus refrigerated in her lab that Xi Zhengli said had a 96.2% resemblance to COVID-19 was the same one that in 2012 sickened six laborers who had gone into clear bat feces or bat guano in a copper mine at Mojiang in Yunnan province of China, South China, about 1800 kilometers away from Wuhan. It is just that it had been named differently, this virus, then. So in 2012, when these six laborers got sick, three of them died ultimately, and their symptoms were exactly the same as COVID-19 symptoms. This virus was named differently. This virus also stayed in the lab, and the lab kept researching the virus. Then around 2015, they began forgetting it. By 2017, they had forgotten all about it. They were not talking about it. Now, as research and the global search for the origins of the virus got more and more intense, maybe out of a guilty conscience, or maybe because there was concern that global scientists groups will get to the bottom of it. And mind you, these were not countries acting, these were people acting voluntarily on their own. Nobody was paying them. This is the group called Drastic, that they will get to it. That Xi Zhengli recently announced some time back that she also had one more sample or one more genome in her records, in her refrigerator, that resembled the COVID-19 virus to the extent of 96.2%. So the immediate question will be, oh, could that be the virus that then mutated into COVID-19? Now the point is that between 96.2% and 100%, there is a big difference. It's about 40 years of mutations away. So that could not be the virus. But was some funny game played with this virus between 2012 and 2017 through gain of function research by trying to fix another kind of spike proteins on this virus to see if it becomes more infectious. So use this virus as a kind of a spine, and on that put spike proteins from another virus, which could be a pangolin virus, because there was a case in China where a bunch of pangolins had died and they had yielded some spike proteins which were not infectious at that point. Anyway, so it is quite likely now, it seems, it's quite possible. I won't say likely, I'll take that back. It is possible that a new, an entirely new, a truly novel virus was created in the lab as a result of these experiments and then escaped with a staffer in the lab, because as we know, US intelligence now reported and has confirmed that in the month of November 2019, several weeks before first formally reported cases were recorded, three researchers at Wuhan Institute of Virology, and these are key researchers involved in gain-of-function research, they had fallen very sick with pneumonia-like symptoms and they had sought hospitalization in Wuhan. That is something that had not come out earlier. And the fact is that the Chinese government also, even when WHO teams have gone there, they have refused to share the serological samples or blood samples of their team in Wuhan. So these were the important findings. So just that the virus that was discovered in these miners who got sick in the copper mine in Mojiang in Yunnan, that virus was named RABTCOV4991. There is some lowercase, uppercase in this. You will see it on the screen. Now, when she made a disclosure to the world at this point that she had this virus which was 96.2% like COVID-19, that was named RATG13. Now, what this Indian couple found out, and immediately others seized onto this thread and then moved on with this, ran with the ball, was the fact that the two viruses were the same. That the virus that was isolated from these miners in 2012, that is 8 years ago in 2020, and the virus that she now said, the genome of which she had in her refrigerators or deep freeze or whatever they use in virology labs, it was the same virus. So why did she and why did Wuhan Institute of Virology rename the virus? And why didn't they say earlier that it was the same virus? Because one obvious conclusion can be that that's because they did not want anybody to start figuring out that they already had found a virus in nature which was 96.2% like this, and some change on that could have taken it to its current avatar, and which is now mutating very fast in human bodies and becoming all these alpha, beta, etc., gamma, etc. variants, one worse than the other. So the next question came up, did the Wuhan Institute researchers work on this virus as a backbone to stick some other spike proteins or genetic material on this to make it more infectious? Or maybe their intention was not to make it more infectious, it became more infectious, but it does look like they did. To understand the basics, I would suggest an interview that Monali Rahalkar has done with my colleague Jyoti Malhotra. I'm sharing a link with you. Please watch that. She has explained this beautifully and very succinctly. She explains the sequence, how she and her husband found that the two viruses with different names are the same. By the way, now she's not a virologist. She is a specialist on methane oxidizing bacteria, which are environment friendly. So please listen to her interview. She does a very good job of explaining it. And if you are more curious, as I hope you are, given what a serious toll this virus has taken of our lives and how it's altered our lives, I'd also suggest that you read two former New York Times science editors, Nicholas Wade in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists and Donald McNeil Jr. on Medium, and noted investigative writer Catherine Eban in Vanity Fair. In fact, all three links I'm sharing with you with the description of this video. Please read them. They are long articles. One is 11,000 words, one is 7,000 words, and one is, I think, 20,000 words plus. So Wade cracked the mystery for larger audiences. And in fact, I had an entire long Cut the Clutter episode on that. I'm sharing that also with you. He also noted that this virus had a peculiar genomic feature called furin cleavage. That also we talked about. And he raised the question, was it engineered in a lab? Because this is not found in nature. Now that cleavage, furin cleavage, becomes this virus much more infectious, enormously more infectious than the others. So once again, the same question came up. Did the Chinese stitch something onto this virus? So if you read Eban after Wade and listen to Rahalkar carefully, a plausible picture opens up that WIV kept working on that Mojiang mine virus till 2015, maybe 17, then went silent on that. It did produce a new virus and tested it on humanized mice. Now, humanized mice are those where, I'm oversimplifying it, where effectively you have planted more human cells, in this case cells with ACE2 receptors, into the mice to see if these spike proteins will latch onto that. And they found that this was a lot more infectious. Where did the mice come from? The mice came from America. They came from University of North Carolina, from the lab of a famous American virologist called Ralph Baric, who not only does gain-of-function research, but who also taught Xi Zhengli gain-of-function research to begin with. Now, all these tens of thousands of words of writings brings many more revelations. The two key ones are that Peter Daszak, who the Chinese accepted as a member of the WHO delegation, he not only signed but also orchestrated a letter to the Lancet early February last year to say that any talk of a lab leak was rubbish. Now, first of all, he did not disclose, you know, his own conflict of interest that he had funded the Wuhan lab. Second, Catherine Eban's article, there is some really remarkable email exchanges between him and Ralph Baric, where he's telling Ralph Baric, and Ralph Baric is agreeing, that his letter should be done in the Lancet and none of them should sign it, because if they sign it, it will be seen as too loaded. In the end, Daszak signed it. Baric didn't sign it, but remember, Baric is the one who has now gone to the other side. He signed one more joint letter in Science Magazine asking for an investigation so you could find the truth of where the virus came from. The second thing we discover is that soon as the first cases surfaced in Wuhan, Chinese PLA sent its chief virologist, epidemiologist and biodefense scientist, Major General Shen Wei. So within a fortnight of the first few cases being discovered in Wuhan, she was in position with her team and she had taken charge at the lab. Now, nobody's as yet saying there was biological warfare here. In fact, Wade himself, in a off the cuff that he recorded with me, he said very clearly that I'm not saying it's biological warfare, but whatever it is, it needs finding out. Now, there's obviously more to come on this story. That's about as inevitable as the fresh waves of the virus. Virus waves will come and go and then come again. But the big positive from all this is that science, democracy, sense of inquiry, all work, unmindful of the multiple establishments, governments, and the borders. Internet is a force for good. It is this that brings together the finest minds from all over the world, New Zealand to the US via France, and indeed in India, to challenge one superpower desperate to keep an awful secret and the other too polarized to challenge it or to unravel it. And finally, this is also evidence that science is all about critical thinking and critical questioning. Science will even question God. And you know what? I am really dismayed that Dr. Anthony Fauci, in a recent interview with MSNBC, said that if you question me, you question science. No human being is science. For any human being to say, I am science, is like a human being saying, I am God. And even if Dr. Anthony Fauci is God, science would still question him. So I thought this was not just an immodest answer, but also I think he flipped a little bit.